Hey everyone, it's Amna Nawaz. For our latest episode of Settle In, we're getting you ready for the next Winter Olympics. We talked to legendary sports journalist Christine Brennan right before she heads out the door to go to Italy to cover those games. She's been covering the Olympics for almost four decades now, and we talked about a lot. She talked about the prospects for gold for Team USA and figure skating and ice hockey. We talked about a new sport you're going to want to know about called ski mountaineering, or SkiMo, so get ready for that. She also shared some memories from iconic moments she remembers from all the games she's covered in the past, and also how global politics could find their way into these global games. So settle in and have a listen to my conversation with Christine Brennan. Christine Brennan, welcome to Settle In. Thanks for being here.
Amna, it is great to be with you. Thank you.
We have so much to talk about. I know as we sit here, you're getting ready to head out to Italy to go cover another Olympic Winter Games. There's a lot to talk about, but I kind of want to start with just you right now in this moment, because I know you've done this before. You're a veteran at covering these games, but how are you feeling going into these games? Something feel different or more exciting? What's going on with you right now?
You know, I am so fortunate. As a girl growing up in the suburbs of Toledo, Ohio, watching the Olympics on TV, I would have hoped to go to one as a fan. You know, like have the family buy tickets for some future Olympics, you know, and go. I watched every second. I cried kind of when they ended, you know. It's like, oh, those 2 weeks were amazing, you know, they're over. And here I am gearing up for my 22nd consecutive Olympic Games.
22nd.
Winter and summer.
Wow.
Started in LA in 84. I started in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And this will be my 11th consecutive Winter Olympics. I've done 11 consecutive summer.
That's amazing.
And yeah, and so for me, I'm a journalist and I cover the issues and I write negatively about a lot of things at the Olympics, obviously positively, of course, about things. 100% journalism. I'm not a fan. I'm not cheering.
Right.
But what would 17-year-old me have thought of this? And that never leaves my mind, how appreciative I am of the opportunity,
Yeah. How
fortunate I am. And it wants me to, you know, makes me want to do this, obviously do the job properly, tell people things that maybe they're not seeing or hearing, write about important issues that are out there, clearly Yeah. International issues, the way the Americans will be received overseas, sexual abuse in figure skating. I've written about that for talked about that for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. There are issues there that will potentially pop up with some of the skaters. So even though I grew up as a big fan of the Olympics, I think it's one of those things where you can be kind of in awe at the opening ceremonies while I'm writing a column for USA Today that is criticizing something the International Olympic Committee is doing at that exact moment.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know
you
if that makes sense to people, but that's what a journalist does.
Yeah.
And I am so proud to be able to do it, and I never, ever lose sight of how lucky I am.
It's so cool that you haven't lost the excitement behind it, because I can imagine if you do things 5, 6, 7, 11 times, 22 times, at some point it starts to feel like, here we go again, but there's none of that right now for you.
No, because I am true to that girl growing up in Toledo, and you know, for example, I also am doing a podcast. I mean, frankly, who isn't?
Right.
You know, I think my neighbor down the street's got one. And we're not going to be competitive with yours, but at Milan Magic, Brian Boitano and I are co-hosting it for USA Today.
Oh, that's so cool.
And so I covered Brian. My first Olympics was 88.
Yeah.
I covered the Battle of the Bryans.
Yes.
We got to know each other then. I certainly have known him over the years.
Yeah.
But again, the thought that that Brian and I are sitting at microphones like you and I are, and of course I'm the journalist, he's the Olympic gold medalist,
Yeah.
and we have a different perspective on things.
So that's a podcast people can tune into while you're there covering the Olympics.
Yes,
you and Brian Boitano.
Milan Magic, as they say, Amna, wherever you find your podcasts.
That's a good name, Milan Magic.
You.
Okay, this is not the most important question I'm going to ask you, but I am deeply curious as someone who travels quite a bit. You're going to a very cold place. For 2 weeks, 3 weeks total?
Yeah, about three,
right?
Yeah.
How do you pack? How do you pack for something like that? Seriously, is it layers? Is it one big coat? Like, what's the secret? You've got to have it down by now.
Well, and especially the Winter Olympics. You know, the Summer Olympics is, and you know, you have far less clothes, mm-hmm. right? Because you're wearing, you know,
no, I'm
tops
dying to know. I wonder about this
and
all the time.
And whatever. So I'm trying to keep it to two suitcases. Okay. Check bags.
Okay.
I definitely put a couple items in the carry-on bag in case the suitcase.
Just in case,
right,
yeah.
For sure. Boots are tough because, you know, you need a couple, you know, sets of boots.
Like warm winter boots, right?
Right. And of course, my little tip, and I would say this for all women, and guys already have this. Guys have neckties. Women, I'm wearing one right now for those who are watching versus listening.
Signature scarf.
A scarf. And I have about 10 of these, and they're actually works of art. Don't laugh. Uh-huh. Works of art from the Toledo Museum of Art. My hometown, of course. One of the great museums in the country. And I will tell you this. The last Olympics, which of course was Beijing, mm-hmm. which of course was the Kamila Valieva controversy and doping story.
Oh, we're going to talk about all that.
That I was able to break that story. So I was on CNN. I literally was on air. I basically slept for an hour or two. And you've done this before at events mm-hmm. where you're just going. And I just switched up the scarf, and otherwise I had the exact same
new
clothes
look.
On. Don't tell anyone.
I love that. That's such a good tip.
So that's
and a little nod to Toledo everywhere you go.
Right. Thank you.
Always in your heart.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about the games. They're heading back to Europe. So you're heading to Italy. Just kind of set the scene for us. For people who haven't been getting up to speed just yet, what are we in store for? How many places are they going to see across Italy? What are we talking about in the scale and the scope of these games?
Well, I think, first of all, you said the most important words. We're heading back to Europe. And I think for so many people, the Winter Olympics and Europe are synonymous. Mm-hmm. The Alps, you know. Peggy Fleming winning her gold medal in 1968 in Grenoble in the Alps, live and in color. A lot of people tuned their first color TV sets, got the color right to Peggy's chartreuse dress. You know, I mean, that's kind of what you think of with an Olympic Games. And it was Beijing 4 years ago, Pyeongchang in South Korea 8 years ago, and Sochi back in 2014, mm-hmm. 12 years ago. And of course, that's Russia, so it's close. But here, this is right there in the Dolomites in the Alps. And what is unique about this is it's Milan and it is Cortina, and there's a couple other cities in the mountains, all going to be hosting the Olympics.
Okay.
Cortina and Milan are about 250 miles apart, but that's not a normal like 4 or 5 hour drive because you're going through the mountains. So there's actually like satellite locations for these Olympics. We've never seen anything like this, where the central city is Milan, but so many of the athletes will never make it to Milan. They're going to be opening ceremonies in different locations. The main one in Milan, because the fact is that you've got everything so spread out. First time ever.
So all the athletes won't necessarily be in one place at the same time.
Well, exactly.
Is that the first time they've done it that
first
way?
Time that certainly that I've covered.
Wow.
And frankly, then the answer would be yes, because everything was so much smaller, you know, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, et cetera. In 1956, Cortina actually hosted the Olympics to show you how small they were. Tenley Albright was the first American woman to win an Olympic gold medal in figure skating. Dr. Tenley Albright. It was small enough to be contained in that mountain town, Cortina. Now Cortina is just one of several of the locations to show, again, the size. And what we've seen over the last years, and people might remember Salt Lake City in 2002.
Yes.
Calgary in 1988. You know, these are big cities now, obviously Beijing 4 years ago, hosting the Winter Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
That's new. It's not the tiny little town anymore. And that's because they want to go big. They obviously sponsors, you know, it's all a big, huge production for these two and a half weeks. But that's what's different. So the athletes, for example, USA House is usually the gathering spot for the athletes. Well, there's really no USA House this time. There'll be Ice House, which will have, for example, Milan has the hockey, men's and women's hockey.
Okay.
It has speed skating, and it has figure skating time.
It's a totally different experience
for the
athletes and for the spectators.
Watching
on
TV, you won't even know the difference because it's just a TV show. But for those on the ground, there's going to be a lot. Well, you're in one place or the other. You're really not moving around.
I mean, it is mind-boggling to think of the scale of what the Olympics are today. So 3,000 athletes from more than 90 countries and territories represented. But it's important to point out none of this happens in a vacuum, right? These are all athletes coming from their respective countries, and there's a lot happening in the world today. So there's a couple countries we should note that aren't going to be there, that aren't represented, right? There's still bans in place. Tell us about that.
We're talking about Russia in particular. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is well-deserved. If my flippant side would say this is the Lifetime Achievement Award for the Russians in the sense of their cheating. over the years, that they should have been kicked out earlier. And the latest cheating, I mean, all the figure skating judges were, the Soviets were kicked out in 1978 for a year just because, again, of the lifetime of cheating. And, you know, that's, and it sounds like, hey, here's an American who's being negative about the Russians. Well, I am, because these are the facts.
There's a documented pattern there.
Absolutely.
You've reported on.
So in 2014, people might remember the New York Times in particular breaking a lot of this news, where there was the systematic and systemic doping led by Putin's government to get, there was a hole in the wall, kind of right out of a James Bond movie, where the bad urine, the tainted urine, the doped up urine from the drug test was sent through a little hole in the wall, and clean urine came back, and that's how the Russians cheated at their home Olympics in Sochi in 2014. Well, they got caught. But then it's been piecemeal punishment ever since. This time, Russia is completely banned, finally. And it's, of course, because of the invasion, their invasion of Ukraine.
Right.
So that's where we are on this.
And that was the IOC basically saying, this is the line for us, right?
Exactly.
And so can their athletes still compete or no?
These athletes, there will be several athletes, for example, there will be a female figure skater, Adelia Petrosian, who actually is a medal favorite. There will be a male figure skater, also could be a mix. There will be a few other individual athletes, no teams. So no Russian men's hockey, no Alex Ovechkin, no Russian women's hockey. It goes even to pairs and ice dance skating, just the two,
wow.
No pairs.
No teams, and no flags, no...
No like, anthem, no
yeah,
nothing.
Yeah.
But there will be a couple of Russian athletes, but they will not be called Russian, and yet they still could be as good as the Russians that we've known from the past.
I mean, we are at this moment of enormous global uncertainty, right? There's all these shifts in terms of alliances and just America's place in the world. And I wonder how, as you're preparing for this, because I know you prepare a ton going into these games, do you anticipate some of that's going to show up at the games? I mean, will there be protests? Will people try to use this platform to make a statement? What are you kind of getting ready for?
You know, the thing you wonder right off the bat, and I'm sure everyone listening or watching would maybe go, yeah, this is the one that comes to mind. Will the Americans be booed?
Really?
And that's a question. And yeah. I ask that as a question with a question mark at the end. I don't know.
Wow.
I have never seen in all of the opening ceremonies I've covered, which is all of them going back to 84 in LA, I don't recall hearing boos or whistles. As we know, sometimes it's whistling, which is booing, depending on the country you're in. There certainly can be rustling and uncertainty. Summer Olympics has, you know, double the countries or more than the winter. And of course, you have more tension with all the Summer Olympic nations that show up.
Yeah.
I mean, the Winter Olympics can be a lot of, you know, Norwegians and Scandinavians and Northern Europeans named Sven with snowboards, you know. And I'm not saying you don't have
but
tension.
But there's been tensions between the U.S. and NATO allies,
well,
right? I mean, look at Denmark.
Now, exactly,
right?
Now. Yeah. But in the past, you know,
yes.
You have, yes, of course,
yeah.
Not by any means minimizing it, a huge,
yeah.
huge issue and huge story for us. We're sports, I'm a journalist who happens to cover sports,
right.
But that means I dive into international issues, of course, all the time.
Yeah.
I will answer my own question. Do I think that the Americans will be booed as they come into the opening ceremony? My guess is probably not. Hmm. Number one, a lot of U.S. tourists go to these events, mm-hmm. come overseas. Other countries that might be friendly to the U.S. also, although, again, that certainly has been an issue in the last year with the Trump administration.
Yeah.
But I also think, in general, people, even if they're angry about things, don't necessarily force that or direct that to the athletes who are coming in, right?
It is fascinating. You feel the question has to be posed.
Oh,
it,
without
it's a
doubt.
Sign of the times.
How's it going to happen and what's going to happen? And that's a question I've never, I'm trying to think. Even, I mean, first of all, you know, Seoul in 1988, lots of, you know, of course, you still had the Soviet Union back then.
Yeah.
East Germany, you know, so that you'd have tensions. I'm not saying you didn't. But then it's almost, again, they hope for this little island oasis of peace for almost 3 weeks, which, of course, was shattered completely in 1972. Mm-hmm. September 5th of 1972, the 11 Israeli athletes and coaches who were murdered in the village and then at the airport at the Munich Games by the Black September terrorists. I was a little girl watching at home in suburbs of Toledo, and I'll never forget it
yeah.
as long as I live. And so, so yes, the notion that politics doesn't enter the Olympics, and I'm, there might be people going, "Oh, wait, but you know, they don't have politics. Are you kidding? I mean, this is it's a mirror of our society."
Yeah.
And so that's why I say, will there be booing? Will there be issues? You asked about protests. You know, it's Italy. It's a free society. There will be a lot of people there. And I'm glad they will be there. You know, we were just in Beijing. It was COVID. Couldn't do anything, obviously totally masked up.
Yeah.
But also it would never have allowed that. Beijing yeah. wouldn't have. So thank goodness there can be protests. We will see. Athletes will certainly be asked about the president. They will certainly be asked about his policies. Of course they will.
Yeah.
We would be shirking our duties as journalists to not ask. Now, do you ask the question as the person is celebrating their Olympic gold medal? No, that's not the first question. And that's probably not the second or the third. But in the press conference, especially yeah. if we've seen tweets or posts from the White House
right.
about something, and I've got to believe we will.
Yeah.
So this could be a developing story, and I promise you I will be on it.
I know you will. I know you will. Okay, let's talk about some of the big storylines to watch, because there's so many fascinating personalities and so many potentially exciting moments. Let's start with women skiing and Michaela Schifrin. Mm-hmm. Because if you are someone like me who loves a redemption story or loves a comeback, this could be the one, right?
Absolutely.
Tell us about Michaela.
Michaela Schifrin is only 30 years old.
Yeah.
And she's lived a lifetime or two or three, you know, early success, Sochi and Pyeongchang. And then absolutely a devastating Olympics in 2022, which she just
broke my heart to watch.
And you and probably millions of people
shattered
watching.
For her. Yeah.
No, and you know, just had a terrible run of bad luck,
yeah.
didn't finish. Everything that she had done so beautifully over the time she'd been in the public eye,
yeah.
it all fell apart.
Yeah.
You know, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. But, you know, why people love her so much and why she is such a terrific role model and good person is the way she handled it.
Yeah.
Answered every question. Showed up at interviews. Didn't run away.
Total
didn't
pro.
Hide. Absolute pro. Talked about her mental health. Talked about how hard this was. I mean, how many people, Amna, did she help? How many 16-year-old girls out there were going through something? Did they look at her and go, wow,
yeah.
you know, this is a woman who's won so much, greatest of all time, greatest skier of all time. And now she's dealing with this and she's handling it.
Yeah.
And here she comes.
Here
she
comes.
She is back. Only 30, as I said, so yeah. There's still plenty of time. She's skiing great. She's going to focus more on her bread and butter, which are, you know, the slalom, giant slalom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things with the gates where, again, for those who don't watch this or pay attention, where she's, you know, just back and forth around those
You're
gates.
You're talking at my level now. It's a good thing with the gates.
Well,
okay. The thing with the gates.
And you know
it.
What? As a journalist, I mean, I know a fair amount about this. There's a lot I don't know either, which never bothers me because yeah. I know that so many readers and viewers don't necessarily know this.
No.
Once every 4 years, these people drop into our lives. They never overstay their welcome.
Right.
They're not like all these other athletes. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm done with that, or you love them, or whatever, you know, in pro sports. And they're gone. And
yeah.
often they never come back.
Yeah.
So this is their moment, which makes it all the more interesting and all the more, you know, emotional and dramatic. Obviously, Michaela Schifrin is back.
Yes.
And she is the gold medal favorite in a couple events for sure. But everyone's going to be holding their breath because unlike the Summer Olympics where, you know, someone is swimming or running, right? Yes, things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
There are upsets. Katie Ledecky's in the pool. She could win or lose. But you're not going to, like, necessarily slip. Or you don't have ice, you don't
right.
have snow. So
things go horribly wrong so quickly in the Winter Games.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And yeah. that's why you're even on edge more. And it,
yeah.
you know, again, as the quote unquote hard bitten journalist that I am, if I'm watching, which I won't be in the mountains because I'll be, as I mentioned earlier, as we're talking about the logistics,
yeah.
but I'll watch.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you my heart rate will go up.
Oh, God.
And I barely know her. You know, and because we're human beings.
Yeah.
But that's what the Winter Olympics are, this one moment. And again, it's 4 years. You don't have a game next week. You don't lose the Super Bowl and you can try again in 52
this
weeks.
This is it. You've mm-hmm. been working for this moment. Okay, let's talk about figure skating, because I know that's where you're going to be focusing a lot of your reporting and work as well. And I feel like that's where a lot of core memories for viewers are made. And certainly for me growing up watching, I still have memories of these great American skaters like Michelle Kwan and Christy Yamaguchi and Tara Lipinski. How are the Americans doing? Can they medal this year?
Yes, they yes. can. They should. I think they will.
Okay.
I actually think this could be the greatest U.S. figure skating team ever assembled.
Really?
And that's saying a lot because you mentioned some of the great names of all time. Obviously, as I mentioned, Brian Boitano and my partner now on this podcast. You know, there's a lot of great moments in U.S. figure skating history. The reason I say this is going all the way back in the record books. There have only been two Olympics where the U.S. has won two gold medals at that Olympics, 1956, Cortina, and then 1960 in Squaw Valley, and that was men's and women's.
Okay.
Now, at that time, there were only three events. Now there are five, and the two additional ones are ice dance, and then, as of 2014, the team competition.
Okay.
That's the one that got it, where Camila Valieva's doping test got involved, and the U.S. finally got the gold 2.5 years later. But so there's more events now. But if you think, that actually shocked me, Amna, as I was going through the record book just to double check this.
That was the last time.
Yeah, 1960 is the last time that two Americans in figure skating won gold, men and women.
Yeah.
So like Peggy Fleming in 68, she was the only gold. Dorothy Hamill in 1976, the only gold. Mm-hmm. You know, that there have been other medals, silver, bronze occasionally, but not gold medals.
Yeah.
This U.S. team, Ilya Malinin, who's 21, from the D.C. suburbs, born and raised in D.C., the son of two-time Olympians, both. His mom, I covered his mom.
You covered his mom?
Yeah, Tatiana Malinina.
Yeah.
He's taken the masculine form of his mom's name. It's easier to pronounce, Malinin. So Ilya, his mom was actually competed against Tara Lipinski and Michelle Kwan. She was eighth when they were first and second in Nagano in 1998. And again, she was in the 2002 games and then in Salt Lake and then withdrew.
So he's coming in with a good pedigree here.
Exactly. Born and raised in the United States. Okay. He is by far the prohibitive Olympic gold medal favorite in the men's event.
Okay.
I mean, if he would have to fall, something would have to go wrong.
Okay.
Obviously, the ice is slippery.
Okay.
And also just a terrific young man. He gets it, the bravado. He calls himself the quad god. You know,
he calls himself the quad god.
Quad god. And you know what? It ain't bragging if you can back it up, as they say. Well, guess what? He landed 7 quadruple jumps in his long program, 4 minutes, in the Grand Prix final in December, and that is the most quadruple jumps ever by a human being in the history of figure skating.
Okay,
so,
Ilya.
Hello, quad god.
Okay.
So that's one.
Okay.
Then the team competition, which is kicks off the Olympics, 3 nights, Ilya will be one of the stars of that. So that's where each country puts a man and a woman and an ice dance and pairs team out, short program, long program.
Okay.
Eight performances by each country. The U.S. won the gold last time because of the Russian doping. The U.S. is the favorite to win again. So that now would be the two gold medals. Again, anything's possible. And then ice dance, Madison Chalk and Evan Bates. This is their 4th Olympic Games together. They are a couple off the ice as well. They're married.
Okay.
And they are 7-time national champions, but have never won an Olympic medal.
Ugh.
They won the team gold. They were part of that, but never individual ice dance. It's going to be quite a competition with a couple other teams, but they certainly could win the gold. So that would be potentially 3.
And they're a couple on and off the ice.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Chalk and Bates.
I am always fascinated by that.
Well,
like, my husband and I can't even load the dishwasher together without like getting in. That's intense.
You know, I'll tell them you said that, and
yes,
I'll get a comment for you, and I will text it to you.
I'll take their tips.
Yes. You know what? I mean, there's moments. You know, they all have moments.
Yeah.
I've watched practices, and they talk about it. They're terrific people.
Yeah.
But so they're leaders. They're spokespeople. They've gone through it all. They do have a team gold, but they've never gotten that individual medal. I do believe that for sure they will get an individual gold, silver, or bronze. The question is, will it be gold? But yeah, they just were, you know, friends and skating partners. And of course, you got to sell it in ice dance. You know, you look, it's got to be, it's romantic and it's all this incredible music and all of that, you know, far away, you know, takes you all these, you know, I think part of figure skating is the art, you know, it's the drama, it's like the Broadway show tunes, you know, in some ways, right? Even if they're not skating specifically to that. So they did that for a while and then they realized, hey, by the way, you know, we like each other and they fell in love. and got married a year.
It's better than the opposite, I think.
Right, exactly. But I'll ask how they do with the dishwasher. And then the women. We haven't even talked about the women, which has always been, as you mentioned earlier, you know, when you think of Olympic figure skating, you're thinking of Peggy Fleming, Dorothy Hamill, Christy Yamaguchi, you know, Katarina Witt for East Germany, Tara Lipinski, Michelle Kwan, et cetera. Sarah Hughes, we don't want to forget her, from the last American woman to win a gold medal, 2002.
It was the last
Olympic gold medal in figure skating, you know, which is like Miss America on Ice, because many, you know, basically you don't have to work a day in your life if you're, at least in the old days, Peggy Fleming, Dorothy Hill. No, they worked. I mean, they did events and they did promotions and they had sponsorships, but it is a pretty cool thing, you know.
Yeah.
To this day, people know their names, Peggy Fleming, Dorothy Hamill in particular.
So what name should we know this year?
There's actually, I'm going to give you three names because all three U.S. women are actually terrific in their own way.
Okay.
The least likely to win the gold or win a medal, but that doesn't mean she won't, is Isabeau Levito.
Okay.
Isabeau is 18, from New Jersey. And everybody, turn on your TV because you are watching a young woman who looks like the ballerina on top of the jewelry box.
Really?
So if you want that old school, beautiful look, that kind of that Audrey Hepburn look, Isabeau Levito has got
Isabeau's
that.
Isabeau's your girl.
Now, meanwhile, with all the industrial strength, triple jumps.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, amazing to be able, you know, hockey players leave the ice after a minute and a half, you know, out of breath, and you got, you know, 2 minutes, 40 seconds in the short program and 4 minutes in the long program all by yourself.
Yeah.
And she's a one-time national champ, so she's already done that. At 18. So she was third at the nationals. She made the Olympic team. Second at the nationals, but the reigning world champion is Alyssa Liu. Mm. And she's 20. And get this. She won the national championship, first one at age 13, youngest U.S. woman to ever win a national title. Alyssa Liu won another national championship at 14. She was so little that her competitors, second and third place, had to help her up to get to the top of the medal stand.
That's adorable.
So national champ at 13, national champ at 14, retires at 16, unretires 2 years later at 18, wins the world title at 19, and now makes her second Olympic team at 20.
I love this story already.
And she has come back, as many do, although most don't retire, you know, as teenagers. She has come back with a totally different perspective. She didn't want to, you know, she hated the life of a young kid, regimented as she was. She wanted to go skiing and take vacations and do stuff that she couldn't do.
And be 16.
Yeah. And so she did. And she did that for 2 years, and she loved it. And she goes, now I want to come back to skating.
That's amazing.
And she's lovely. And my favorite story at the national championships, which were in St. Louis a few weeks ago, happened right in front of me. I actually videotaped it and did a reel and all of that, you know, all the good stuff that the kids are doing. I did it too.
Christine, you're right there with the kids.
I am. I think I'm a kid.
I just 100%.
Right, right. And you know, and you're having fun. You love it, right? So I'm a kid. So she skated and she was in first place at the nationals. As I said, she's already won two. She's back. She's defending, you know, reigning world champ.
Yeah.
She's now in first place at the nationals. There's one skater to go, Amber Glenn. We're about to get to her about her for the Olympics.
Yeah.
So Amber Glenn, at that point, two-time national champ, has now come onto the ice. She's the one person who can beat Alyssa Liu. Most skaters go backstage, go through the curtains, hide, go to the bathroom, put on their headphones. They don't want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
Especially if it's the person who can then beat you.
Yeah.
Alyssa Liu, unbelievable. She doesn't leave the ice. She crouches down right in front of the press table so I can see her. And she's watching Amber Glenn and cheering her on, literally clapping for her as she's also blowing her nose because, of course, she's just finished 4 minutes of skating and she needs to, you know, it's cold. Anyway. There's Alyssa Liu cheering for the only person who can beat her. And in fact, Amber Glenn does end up beating her. I mean, you know, I stay in my lane. I'm in sports and obviously international sports and whatever comes with that. Mm. But in our world right now and in our country where everyone is at each other's throats.
Yes.
What a wonderful statement from this one 20-year-old little, you know, she's not tall, little skater, obviously one of the greatest of all time already, world champ, about your competition and about cheering for one another and being on each other's side.
I love that.
Isn't that a great story?
Yeah.
So, of course, it
so
happens
now I'm cheering that, for her too now.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. You just get a long list going here. But that's why I said these Olympics are going to be really something else.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. I mentioned Amber Glenn. So then Amber Glenn wins that national title. It's her third consecutive women's national title. The last person to do that was Michelle Kwan. So Amber Glenn is in pretty rarefied air anyway at this point. Amber is 26. So we've got a 20-year-old and an 18-year-old and a 26-year-old.
26, that's old for
that
figure
is old.
Skating.
That's an age when most people have long since retired from women's figure skating. Injuries, heartache, mistakes, getting sick. I mean, she has been on the door of Olympics before and something has happened and she hasn't had a chance, hasn't made it. And she has persevered. She is an absolutely eloquent, as you would expect from someone who's kind of lived life and had to deal with negative things and tough breaks and the moment and appreciative so much of the moment, as all three of them were hugging each other, which explains why Alyssa Liu's out there cheering for her, because they know how hard it has been for Amber as she's continued, of course. I mean, when a great athlete.
Yeah.
She's got the triple axel, that is the 3.5 revolution jump, the toughest of the triples, and she is right now the only American doing it. Alyssa Liu may or may not, but it's a beautiful triple axel. So she's got the technical content, which is why she's the three-time defending national champ. She also is the first woman in figure skating of any prominence who has come out as LGBTQ. She did that a few years ago, and you know that has been received beautifully. I mean, the rainbow flags that she sees, that she carries when she wins something, you know, wins a competition, then someone hands it to her in the stands, and she's out there on it with the ice, and the U.S. flag, of course, too. So that's Amber Glenn. So that's why I said each could win a medal. They could go 1, 2, 3, very unlikely. Japanese are excellent. Japan could win two of the three medals. Again, Petrosian, the Russian, who will be officially not Russian. Mm-hmm. The negative for her is that she hasn't had international competition because Russia has been banned.
Okay.
So while she is excellent and is expected to do very well, she's also coming in without all of the experience.
That all
the Americans have and that the Japanese have.
Okay.
So, but Glenn, Lou and Levito, that is your. That's
these are my girls.
And
it's
certainly the
for.
Strongest U.S. women's figure skating team since 2002, since Sarah Hughes, Michelle Kwan, and Sasha Cohen.
Here we go, ladies. Here we go. I need to ask you about ice hockey, which I know nothing about. My ice hockey knowledge is limited to that HBO Max show Heated Rivalry, which means nothing in this context.
Although I see people tweeting and posting about that. I think those guys are going to be at the Olympics.
Oh, they should absolutely be there. That would be the smartest thing for the Olympics to do.
Right.
Yes. Have you seen the series?
I watched a few minutes. I'm well aware of what's going on.
We'll do a whole other show about that.
Okay,
that's
sounds good.
Topic.
I'll get back to you on that.
But I did read in my research that after 12 years, the NHL is allowing players to compete again. I guess they didn't back from 2014 on because they didn't want to have to put their season on hiatus. But that's a big deal for the pros to be back competing for Team USA. So what are we expecting there?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, that's, of course, men's hockey. And it's you know, when you say men's hockey, you think of 1980 and, of course, the U.S. beating the Soviets. And that was a group of college, either college hockey players or recent graduates, you know, college, coming together for one of the greatest, I think, you know, the greatest upset in sports history.
Yes, the Miracle on Ice, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And one of the best sports movies of all time.
And watching it.
And that's the end of my ice hockey knowledge.
Well, and at Northwestern, we ran through the streets. We went down to Chicago and ran through the streets till 4 a.m. that night.
Did you really?
Yeah, my boyfriend and all of us, like 20 of us, running through the streets with it when the U.S. beat the Soviets. That's how big
wild.
A deal it was for college kids. Huge. So what has happened is the NHL has realized the magnitude of the platform and the stage that the Olympics are, and a way to elevate the sport and get interest from people other than just hockey, you know, the normal NHL season ticket holders and fans and et cetera. So that was what was going on. Nagano in 98 is when it started, and they had the pros for several Olympics, and then they decided not to do that because they do, to the point you were just making, you do stop the season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a big thing.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, okay, everyone, you know, hold everything in place, and we'll see you in March. You know, that's a very rare thing. It's why baseball players never went. Pro baseball players never went to the Summer Olympics, and why the International Olympic Committee said we're sick of having, you know, we want the best players, and we're not getting the best players. And you had the steroids issue too with baseball too. Yeah. So all of that. Point being, hockey has embraced that, and so they are back. Russia is not. So no Russia, of course, because no Russian teams are allowed. But U.S., Canada, you know.
That's the big rival, right?
It's certainly one of them. Yeah. And I remember in Vancouver in 2010, I was getting ready to go to the closing ceremony. So I was in my hotel room, and it was U.S. and Canada for the gold medal. And I didn't have to watch the game. I could just hear what was going on in the streets in Vancouver.
Just from outside.
So if I heard a roar, I knew the Canadians had scored. If I heard a groan, I knew the U.S. had scored. Canada did win that gold. And, you know, it's really, you know, it's this Canadian national sport, right? Hockey, men and women. And, it's good. And again, these are names people know. And that's what the TV broadcasters rely on, and the European nations as well. You've got famous pro athletes who come and play for their country. And they do. It is pretty cool to see. They're multimillionaires, and yet, you know, they're playing for their flag and their nation, and I do love that. And then, you know, of course, the women's side.
Well, yes,
right.
This is a big deal now too, right? Because the last time the women competed, there wasn't a professional league here in the U.S. Now we've had one here for the last couple of years, so there's kind of like a ecosystem that they've been competing in to feed to the Olympic team. Does that change the game at all for them?
You know, I think the quality gets better every day, especially in women's sports. And we've seen it in basketball. We've seen it in all these sports where once you throw money into it, when you have coaching, when people care, when moms and dads want their daughters to be just as good as their sons when they're in sixth, seventh, eighth grade, you know, and care but just equally about sports, we see the result. And so hockey, absolutely. That pro league is actually doing quite well. And you know, each day with hockey, you know, the game looks better. You know, there, you know, you have the Neanderthals and the male chauvinists out there who still want to be negative towards women's sports. Well, I think there's like three that are left hiding under a desk in Wyoming. So enjoy it, guys. If you watch the Olympics, you know, you're cheering. You know, and if you're an American, you're cheering for that women's hockey team, and it is a great team. Prediction for you.
Yes.
Prediction.
Okay.
U.S. and Canada will be playing for the gold medal.
Okay.
And the reason I feel good about that prediction is there have been seven times that there's been a gold medal given out in women's ice hockey. Canada's won five. U.S. has won two. And only one time was not, the U.S. was not in the final game. That was Sweden. So bottom line is it's Canada, it's U.S. I covered the game in Pyeongchang in 2018, and oh my goodness, I mean, the rivalry is, it's Red Sox Yankees, it's
really?
Michigan Ohio State.
Yeah.
Now, again, it's not 100,000 people in Michigan Stadium, 105,000, whatever it is, 110,000, but it's whatever the arena is, the intensity, it's great.
So you think U.S. Canada in the women's final.
In the women's, and you know what?
Who do you think wins?
Well,
care to predict that?
Well, Canada has won most of them.
Yeah.
The U.S. is a couple of the ones that the Canada won, the U.S., you know, like by an inch, they missed, you know, an open net that a few Olympics ago.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say the U.S. I'm not cheering one way or the other, obviously. I'm an American. A U.S. citizen, but I do think you've mentioned the interesting point you're making about a pro league. This is why the U.S. women's soccer team is so good.
Yes,
is because the U.S. cared then to have either a developmental team, a national team, and have tournaments and continue to play friendlies.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an Olympic team, whatever the sport, women's or men's, and then you just don't play. You know, then it's that they drop off a cliff until 4 years later. Well, that happened with Brazil and women's soccer, and because the Brazilians couldn't have cared less about their women's team. Outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Marta, you keep that going.
Yeah.
So here now you have, to your point, you have the women having an opportunity to play games, continue to be coached, continue to learn, play together, be teammates. Some of them obviously then will be teammates on the Olympic team.
Mm-hmm.
But also you have an ongoing system that supports year round, you know, all 4 years of that quadrennial.
Yeah.
Not just saying, oh, go and be good at the Olympics and we'll see you in 4 years.
Yeah.
Which we were doing to women's sports in particular for probably a generation.
Yeah. You mentioned Kamila Valieva, and I just want to remind folks about what a big deal that was, because you broke so much news on this story, and it obviously had a huge impact on U.S. figure skating as well. As you mentioned, they got the gold by default after that investigation into her doping scandal was completed. Then they had to go to Paris to receive it, like 2 years after the actual Olympics. Does any of that still hang over the competition? Like, how is that going to kind of fuel and find its way into the conversations and the competition now?
The question of doping is always going to be a part of the Olympics. Yeah. And I sometimes laugh, and not like in a funny way, when people in baseball say, well, the steroids era is over in baseball. It's not. I mean, there's way more money in baseball than there is in the Olympics, and people will cheat, sadly. And I'm not making any accusations here. I'm just saying
we can use
our brains. And the bad chemists are still way ahead of the good chemists. And we saw that with Lance Armstrong. We've seen it. I mean, it's not just, you know, Russians. You know, obviously the Americans, you know, we gave the world Marion Jones and Lance Armstrong, the two worst his and her cheaters of all time in sports, sadly. And of course, baseball and whatever. So doping is with us.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people don't want to talk about that, Amna. You know, I know it's, can I just enjoy, you know, a game? Can I, do I need to be thinking of who is the shortstop cheating, or is the, you know, is the offensive lineman juiced up? I get it. I do understand that. But obviously, journalistically, this is what you cover, again, because is it a fair playing field? If it's not a fair playing field, then what do we have, right? Obviously, Russian doping has been a part of the Olympics, you know, and East German, my goodness, what they were doing to those young swimmers in the 70s, telling, here, take your vitamins. And mom and dad couldn't say anything as their daughter was developing muscles and facial hair, and her voice was getting deeper. And that was, of course, the state doing that to those women. So while the world was hating the East German swimmers, women swimmers and track and field stars, you also feel for them as well.
So this sort of stuck in that system.
Right. Oh, for sure. They were victims as well. Yeah. And so that... I don't think, I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to say that doping will be gone and whatever. No, you and I were not born yesterday. Yeah. There is just no way. Having said that, it's a good thing, in my opinion, that Russia is not allowed to have a team in any of the competition. And there's just so few Russian and Belarusian athletes that are allowed individually. Again, we know that's because of the invasion, Putin's invasion of Ukraine. But the end result is they have been punished. And so that's a statement. And hopefully the statement is enough that eventually governments decide, hey, we can't cheat because now we're not at the Olympics.
Right.
So
that's enough of a deterrent to change behavior.
We know how much presidents and leaders of countries care about the athletic success of their athletes.
Right.
We know that President Trump will be all over social media positively, whatever, waving the flag when something great happens at these Olympics.
Right.
We know how Putin, my goodness, in Sochi, he showed up figure skating when they won that team competition, and he's, you know, he's in the team pictures. So this I have no idea. I don't cover Putin, but he cannot be happy with the fact that he doesn't have a team. His flag will not be at the Olympics. Hopefully that's a deterrent. But again, we don't know. Yeah. But going back to Valieva, I know people have asked me, she was 15 4 years ago. She's 19 now. She is skating in shows in Russia. She is not competitive anymore. The Russians have moved on. The Russians do that in a way that I think is a real negative. I mean, they have these young skaters. They, in the last three Olympics, Russians have won 5 of the 9 Olympic women's figure skating medals.
Wow.
And they're all gone.
Yeah.
So you've got they're basically put on the discard pile before they hit 20. Well, the United States, obviously, we've just talked about Alyssa Liu at 20 and Amber Glenn at 26.
Yeah.
Well, clearly the United States is not doing that.
So there is going to be a new phrase I think everyone's going to be saying after these games, which is skimo, because there's a new sport, ski mountaineering. What do we need to know?
My prediction on this, it's going to be a huge hit on television.
Okay.
And again, my predictions actually are often wrong. So, so you know, take it with a grain of salt or you know, whatever. But
what
is this? Well, when I have been focusing on this and keeping an eye on it, and reading a little bit about it and watching what's been going on, the one thing that hit me is this two-word phrase, skiing uphill.
No, thank you.
Skiing uphill. We are talking about, I think the equivalent could be in layperson's terms, like an Ironman triathlon. You know what I mean?
Oh, gosh. Okay.
We're talking about mountain climbing. It's all kind of included in this.
Yes.
Mountain climbing and skiing uphill. In other words, the effort to get up to the mountain, and of course you're at altitude there, right? Or at very, very rare air.
Yeah.
And now you're climbing, you're skiing uphill, it's endurance. And as I said, I actually think, first of all, this will be the first time ever.
Yeah.
And I think people are going to be going, what is this? And I cannot wait to watch a man or woman ski uphill.
Correct.
I mean, because those of us who ski, and I have over the course of my life, and maybe you have others, you know, you ski downhill. you don't ski uphill.
You use gravity.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so the strength, that's why I say the Ironman triathlon, and we are talking about superhuman efforts here. The backdrop will be extraordinary. We're talking about the Dolomites, the mountains. I mean, that's just going to be gorgeous.
Yes.
And when people, when fans, observers, spectators, people tuning on their TVs or watching on their devices, whatever, when they see these new things, right? You know, over the years, snowboarding, of course, got in the Olympics. It's now totally traditional.
Yes.
Snowboard cross and all kinds of other kinds of things. X Games, right? Mm-hmm. The old ESPN X Games. Why is this in the Olympics? I think a lot of people might ask.
Yes.
Certainly the Summer Olympics, breakdancing, which became infamous for the Australian, among others. Why? Here's why, folks. The idea is to try to attract younger viewers. And by younger, at this point, I mean almost young, under, what, 50, 55 even, you know, that didn't grow up with Jim McKay and ABC and the Olympics and what have you. That trying to attract those younger viewers who are intrigued by this, who might even, you know, do some of this stuff, right?
And who made you an interest to be like, what is this thing about?
Right.
Yeah.
Now we know that older people will do that because it sounds interesting, and they'll already be watching theoretically, because they're going to be, you know, appointment TV, and they're going to watch it. But so many, I think, will want to see it on their, want to watch the videos on Instagram and on TikTok and whatever else, wherever they're getting their news and their information. And in this case, NBC and the other rights holders, they want a piece of that. They desperately need that. They need young people to care about the Olympics as much as their parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents. If they don't get those young viewers now, or at least attract them on their devices, on their phones, if not via the TV in the living room, well then what do you have in the next 20, 30 years when that's your core audience and all of a sudden they're not in tune to watching the Olympics?
So SCIMO one to watch.
I think it's going to be big. And I can't wait. I will not be anywhere near it, not because I wouldn't want to be, but I'll be, I choose indoor events at the Winter Olympics.
That's the smartest way to do it.
You know what?
Yeah.
I mean, it's cold outside, but it's not warm in our
ice. You can have a hot cocoa in your hand and still do your job.
All my colleagues, I see their tweets and their posts, and they're on a mountaintop, and they have seven layers on, and it's minus 20.
No, thank you.
No.
And plus, I'll watch that later.
It's figure skating, which has always been the ultimate American drama.
So, as you well know, these games have the power to create these magical, singular moments that really they define history for us in so many ways, like core memories for so many of us. I'm curious now, as you're going into these games, do you carry some of those with you? Like when you look back on past winter games in particular, are there still moments that you're like, I can't believe I witnessed that. I can't believe that happened.
All the time.
Really?
All the time. You know, it's interesting, longevity is not always, prized in our country. And Ilya Malinin, for example, the quad god, should he win that gold medal? You know, to put it in perspective, and by the way, not just me, I mean, other journalists can do this, although I probably go back longer than most, but to be able to put in perspective the Battle of the Bryans in 1980 in Calgary, where Brian Boitano, as he has said, he only did triple jumps, only, quote unquote, only, and everything that he did as a triple, Ilya Malinin is doing as a quad. You know, that I think that helps the reader, that helps the viewer, the consumer of news, understand the magnitude of what they're watching. I did watch Brian Boitano. I did watch Brian Orser, that incredible battle. 1/10 of 1 point on one judge's scorecard, the difference between gold and silver.
Oof.
And they remember it to this day, both of them. I know both of them. And it's, you know, it's ingrained. You know, moving on, all of the Olympics and disappointment. You know, Michelle Kwan, who just finished her stint as ambassador to Belize, so clearly a success story on the ice and off. 9-time national champ, 5-time world champ, 2-time Olympic medalist, but not a gold medalist.
Yeah.
1998, favored to win the gold, skated great, would have won every gold medal except the one she was going for that night in Nagano. Tara Lipinski comes along, all credit to Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Those 4 minutes, she grabs the judges by the throat and says, come along on this incredible joyride with me. And she won. Again, 1/10 of 1 point on one judge's scorecard, as close as it could be back in the old 6.0 system.
Yeah.
Now it's a point system. It's different. But, you know, Michelle, silver. And then four years later, she comes back to Salt Lake City, and it's bronze.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that informs me.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think there are times people think about us, you know, that we just are giving the news, you know, reporting, interviewing, and you know, and yeah, we do that. Of course we do that. But we're human beings. And I'm not clapping for them. I am not cheering. You don't want me to do that. You want me to be taking notes and doing my job to give you the information, the viewer, the listener, the reader, what, you know, get those quotes and comments as quickly as possible because you've just watched. What happened? I want to hear.
Yeah.
But we're human beings, and you know something like Michelle Kwan, who I knew and know so well, to see that disappointment, to cover that, to watch how she rebounded, to watch, you know, the incredible success she is in every way.
Yeah.
You know that. So when if you're interviewing someone who comes in fourth, you know, at these Olympics, I've covered and interviewed a lot of people who've come in fourth. You know the tone, you know, of your voice. You know what it means. I'm never going to win an Olympic gold medal. Never come close. Never, you know, I'm an athlete, but never. And that's, but I've been around so many, hundreds and hundreds of these athletes at this point that I feel, and I'm not trying to brag about that at all. I'm just saying that I would be mad at myself if I didn't incorporate all of their stories going back to the 80s in every question and in every paragraph and in every soundbite that I am able to offer.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the reasons I have been such a huge fan of yours, too, in the way you do your job, because the journalism is always first. You're never afraid to ask the tough questions, but you bring this empathy. Like, you care about the athletes that you cover. That's clear in what you do.
Well, thanks.
And I am among the many who are really looking forward to watching your work and hearing your work and tuning into your podcast, Milan Magic, right?
That's it. Yes, thank
and,
you.
And I'm just so grateful you took the time to hang out with us before you head out to cover another Olympics. Christine Brennan, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
No, thank you. I've loved it. Thank you so much.